This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. Over the last 4 weeks, we've been having conversations with visionaries in the arts around Boston, trailblazers who've garnered local and national acclaim for their work, and we conclude that series today with M.T. Anderson.
Anderson is a renowned author of young adult fiction, that is, books for teens, but smart books for teens. No vapid vampire romances here. His historical novel, The Astonishing Life of Octavia Nothing, about an African slave in Revolutionary-era Boston, won a National Book Award in 2006.
I reported a profile of Anderson that was on WBUR's Morning Edition today, and you can hear it again later in All Things Considered. But right now, M.T. Anderson joins us live in the flesh in our studios. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I think of the teen books when I was a teen, and they were kind of happy-schmappy and generally morally simplistic. Now, today you've got The Hunger Games, which is dark and morally complex, and Twilight, which is dark and, I think, kind of morally bankrupt. But for those listeners who aren't familiar with your work, what you are known for is sort of having, you know, cornered the market early on, at least in the contemporary craze of young adult fiction, on smart, morally complex books for teens that were occasionally dark. I wonder what led you there.
Well, it just that's my vision of the world when I was a teenager. As a teen, I could tell, and a lot of teens obviously know that the world is a much more complex place than books tend to portray it as. And so you want something that acknowledges that. You don't want to be stumbling forward in the dark, knowing that there are pitfalls all around you. And I think that's what I wanted to reflect in my writing.
Let's give listeners a taste of that. Tell us about the premise of Feed.
Okay, so Feed is a novel which takes place in a future, 50 or so years ahead of right now, in which everyone has a chip in their head which gives them instant internet access. And while that is very cool in many ways, it allows you to purchase things without using a credit card, or allows you to text other people without moving your thumbs around. You can essentially just think directly to them. On the other hand, it means that the whole population has become a little bit confused because they are undergoing a constant barrage of advertising in their thoughts.
So kind of stupid, in addition to confused,
right,
I have to say.
Sure. And so that's the idea of the book.
Could you read us something from it?
Certainly. One second here. So, here is the main character who has one of these feeds in his head, falling asleep at night with the sort of the burble of media going through his thoughts. I could feel all of my family asleep in their own way around me, in the empty house in our bubble, where we could turn on and off the sun and the stars. And the feed spoke to me real quiet about new trends, about pants that should be shorter or longer, and bands I should know, and games with new levels and stalactites and fields of diamonds. And friends of many colors were all drinking Coke, and beer was washing through mountain passes, and the stars of the Oh Wow thing had got lesions, so lesions were hip now, and real hip, and mine looked like $1 million. The sun was rising over foreign countries, and underwear was cheap, and there were new techniques to reconfigure pecs, abs, and nipples, and the President of the United States was certain of the future, and at Weatherby and Crotch, there was a sail banner and nice rugby shirts, and there were pictures of freckled prep school boys and girls and chinos playing on the beach and making out in the eelgrass, and as I fell asleep, the feed murmured to me again and again, "All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well."
That's an excerpt from the 2002 book Feed by our guest M.T. Anderson. He's a writer born in Cambridge.
That's correct.
And raised in Stowe.
That's right.
And now back in Cambridge and splitting your time between here and Vermont.
Exactly.
And so local boy through and through, and we're delighted to be able to claim you. That book, here's how Jess Morrison, a follower on Facebook, reacted to it. She wrote, I think about his book Feed nearly every day. The idea of a constant information feed that people willingly implant themselves with is beginning to feel less and less like fiction. Did you intend it to be a cautionary tale about the future, or is it something that's a little more so about the present?
Well, at the time I wrote it, which was in around 2001, the technology seemed like it was very far off. So I really thought of it more as a sort of satirical thing about something that had already happened, which was the fact that I felt like I already had, in a sense, the inner voice of advertising speaking within me all the time. So to me, I wasn't really focused on the fact that the technology might, in fact, come about. And now there are in fact things being spearheaded that actually are quite like what I talked about, purely by accident on my part.
Well, it drew a lot of comparisons to George Orwell when it first came out. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking that if Orwell had written your book, the feed that is this constant feed of internet that's going into people's – a chip in people's brains, the feed would have come from the government in his 20th century world. In your 21st century world, very presciently, I think, the feed comes from one of, I think, three sort of Verizon-like
right.
private service providers, which is
exactly.
very, very contemporary. And I think, you know, without giving away the end – you know, one of the characters, something very terrible happens to one of the characters, mm-hmm. essentially as a result of them not being able to upgrade their service contract.
Exactly.
In the process of preparing to talk with you, I talked to a fan of yours. She's a 15-year-old kid in Brookline. Her name is Juliana Kaplan. And she told me that she feels just bombarded by today the stupid reality teen dramas like Degrassi, and mm-hmm. and she saw that reflected in your vision of these futuristic fake TV shows in the future in feed. And here's what she said.
There's like one for girls where it's called Oh Wow Thing. And the girls like love it, and you watch TV in your head, or you like you chat people from in your head, and I guess that's like that does remind me of texting a lot.
I mean, that was the nature of that entire conversation I had with her. She mm-hmm. felt like feed was about her life now.
Which is funny because she was probably just born when I wrote it.
That's right. She was a little bit further along than that. But we're speaking with M.T. Anderson, Boston visionary of the week and young adult writer. Fans, what do you like about his books? Teen fans, adult fans, what do you like about his books? Young adult fiction has exploded on the publishing scene in recent years, garnering readers of all ages. What do you think that's about? Is M.T. Anderson part of that? We can take calls, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Tell us a little bit more about your childhood in Stowe.
Oh, I mean, I loved it. It was a really great period when Stowe was a very, very forested town in that period. The farms that had actually sustained it for a long time had actually, in many cases, were falling apart and therefore had regrown as forests. So I just remember walking around in the woods a lot. And, you know, it was great. I think that it was a very all-American town, and I think we were kind of proud of that. For example, I think they filmed an Entenmann's commercial in part of the town, you know, where they eat sort of old-timey cookies
right,
with old-timey
yeah.
people sitting around, and it was perfect for
country
that
country time
town.
Lemonade kind
absolutely
of thing.
Yeah. And we were very proud of the fact that we were actually sufficiently American to merit that little horse and buggy walking down our street.
And the revolutionary history of that region of the state?
Oh, of course. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I ended up writing a sort of a gothic novel about the revolution as a result, in many ways, of having grown up there and feeling that that revolutionary history was really part of the lives of the people around me.
Why don't you set up that novel for us? You're talking about The Astonishing Life of Octavia Nothing. Set up a reading and take it away.
Okay, so this is a book which is, well, it's initially unclear what it's about. I wanted it to seem at first almost like some sort of gothic fantasy. And in fact, it is a portrait of things going on in Boston in the late 18th century. So this is just the very first page of it. I was raised in a gaunt house with a garden. My earliest recollections are of floating lights in the apple trees. I recall in the orchard behind the house orbs of flame rising through the black boughs and branches. They climbed, spirituous, and flickered out. My mother squeezed my hand with delight. We stood near the door to the ice chamber. By the well, servants lit bubbles of gas on fire, clad in frock coats of asbestos. Around the orchard and garden stood a wall of some height, designed to repel the glance of idle curiosity and to keep us all from slipping away and running for freedom, though that, of course, I did not yet understand. How doth all that seeks to rise burn itself to nothing?
So the narrator there is your protagonist, Octavian, and why was he being unwittingly held captive?
So it turns out And I think we're only riding roughshod over the first 40 pages here or so, but I'm ruining those surprises. But it turns out that he is, in fact, the subject of an insane Enlightenment experiment. And he discovers that he always has been the subject of this insane Enlightenment experiment. So he is actually an Anglo-African who is being raised with a full classical English education to study the capacities of African thought as opposed to Western European thought in the period. And this, in fact, is something that did happen in the 18th century. And in the 17th century, actually, in Cambridge itself, for example, it happened at Harvard, except with the training of Native Americans at Harvard.
Why are you not a historian? You seem so obsessed with it.
Oh, well, I guess I'm not smart enough. I don't know. but I am really obsessed with it. And I think that part of it is that thing of growing up in a town like Stowe, where every period of history has left its flotsam and jetsam. So you can see the houses from the American Revolution and then the mills from the Industrial Revolution. And every period has left behind part of this palimpsest of American history.
My takeaway in studying you is that you are quite possibly the most respected author in your publishing category today, and I want to play an example of that. I interviewed who is right now, I think, the top-selling YA author in the country at the moment, John Green, who has a new book called The Fault Is in Our Stars, and he's a big fan of yours and of the Octavian series, and here's what he said about you.
He's the most important young adult novelist in American history, the most innovative, the most interesting. It's very hard to explain to, like, serious literary readers that one of the best novels of the 21st century in American literature was published for teenagers in the two Octavian books.
And yet, M.T. Anderson, you garner lots of adult readers. What do you make of that?
Wow. Well, for one thing, I garnered that I need to send John Green like some pies or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, you do.
You know what I mean? yeah, wow. So, yeah, I'm happy that adults read the books as well. I mean, I don't feel that they are books that should feel restricted to teenage readers, even if I wrote them for teenage readers.
We have some fans of yours on the line. Let's go to Carolyn in Medford. Hi, Carolyn. Okay, looks like we don't have Carolyn. Let's try Nina in Waltham.
Hi, how are you?
How you doing, Nina? You're on with M.T. Anderson.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to talk to you, M.T. Anderson. I am a
It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
I want to say that, like your earlier fan who wrote a comment, I also think about Seed almost every day. I'm an alternative educator. I work with teenagers in outdoor contexts, and I see even when we're outdoors, kids are constantly talking about what kind of information they're getting from the Internet. I was in 10th grade in 2001. I didn't know your book until this year. I'm now 25, so I'm one of your adult fans, and I've really seen that technology change from when I was a kid going on instant messaging after school. My generation, I think, was one of the first to have cell phones sort of in school, and I've witnessed that change over the past 10 or so years, and it's haunting to me.
Yeah.
Your book.
Well, I mean, I think the question to ask is, the interesting question to ask is, what about it is haunting, or what do you find troubling, and what is actually just an interesting, great development? You know, I mean, for outdoors, for example, it's, on the one hand, it's sort of strange to be talking about technology outdoors, but you can imagine situations when people are lost or whatever else, when having a cell phone comes in useful. And I think one of the interesting things to say is, what about it is a good thing, and what about it is a bad thing?
But Nina is a digital native who is struggling with those questions right now in a way that neither you or I have been in our lives. I mean, we're both late adopters of these technologies. And what strikes me about that is that the main characters in Feed are also kind of the early adopters, or the digital – they're the Feed natives. They're the first generation that has had the Feed chip in their head from birth. Mm-hmm. And they are discovering totally new things about that experience as opposed to people who had the chip put in as an adult. And I don't want to give away, you know, all the great stuff that happens in the book. But again, I just think the allegorical qualities of that book to our experiences today just keep hitting me over the head. Carolyn from Medford is back with us. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I am an adult fan of MT's work, and I teach a class in young adult literature at Suffolk University.
Oh, great.
And I have two questions. One is that I wanted to know what it was like to write Octavia Nothing. I listened to them as audiobooks, and during a time in my life that was already kind of hard and loved the books, but had to stop so often because it was sort of too much to take in. So that's my first question. And then my second question is, what other authors inspire you, and what other books inspire you? Because I'm always looking for more to add to my syllabus and my own reading.
Sure. Well, so to answer the first question, writing the Octavia Nothing books was, which is to repeat, is sort of these gothic novels that take place in the 18th century, but which are very historically grounded. The thing for that was I really wanted to sink myself into that world and into its language. So for the years that it took me to write those two books, I actually read, I only read either 18th century books, books about the 18th century, or books that they would have read in the 18th century, i.e. things like Greek and Roman classics and that kind of thing. Because what I wanted to do was to force myself into a position where, in fact, to write like someone in the 18th century was more natural for me than to write like someone now. And it was a weird experience. And also, I have to say, you talk about having to stop sometimes because of the difficulty of some of the material. I do think that it finally changed my view of human nature, too, to see that the elegance of that period, the beautiful elegance of the Baroque, did, in a sense, go hand in hand and was predicated on tremendous suffering as well. So to me, it was a very powerful thing to do that research. And it made it very... it made it feel to me like it really propelled me to write the book in a way. So, and to answer the question about other authors, well, there are lots of wonderful, wonderful books that inspire me. I think that the one that is most unusual is Sean Tan's graphic novel, The Arrival, which is a wordless picture book about a guy arriving at a sort of a fantasy New York. And it's wordless because he cannot understand the language there, and you, in fact, as a reader, cannot understand the language, so you have to go through the immigrant experience. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book.
Lots of interesting work happening in graphic novels right now.
Absolutely.
Notably, one that you're finishing up, I believe.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I'm actually working on a translation and adaptation of a medieval epic poem by Chrétien de Troyes. So it's going to be an epic, you know, with, you know, your typical knights and dragons and that kind of thing. However, it's also a deeply emotional story that I think will make a very, I don't know, it's interesting for me to think about the visual elements of a graphic novel as I translate this thing and turn it into a script.
On its face, it doesn't sound like something with a lot of teen appeal.
Well, except that it is actually a action-packed fantasy story with, in fact, a lot of very intense emotional stuff going on. So, yeah, I actually think that, weirdly enough, if you say medieval epic, it sounds very remote. But if you say a sort of a fantasy story filled with really amazing, heart-rending situations, that to me is a big something teens will be interested in.
We're speaking with young adult writer M.T. Anderson. Let's go to Lauren in Peabody. Hi, Lauren.
Hello.
What's
I'm
your thought?
Happy that. Oh.
No. You've got it.
I just want to say I'm happy I can talk to M.T. Anderson because I really enjoyed the book feed.
Oh.
I connected with it because I'm a teenager in high school right now, and I guess my feed for me is either the internet or my cell phone, because I can chat with my friends and see what's new. And I just really connected with the book, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, well, thank you. That's great. And you know, frankly, I think that people of my age tend to project all this onto you and say it's something that your generation is dealing with. But of course, in another way, my generation is too. I mean, for me as well, I am always connected with my iPhone. I check it all the time. I check, you know, my email while I'm going through the car wash or whatever else. So all of us, I think, are actually dealing with these questions. And it's wonderful that you read the book and loved it. Thank you very much.
Where do you see young adult literature going? There's a lot of really, really exciting stuff happening there that I've only recently been exposed to, things that deal with the moral realities of the world in a way that is really honest and very sophisticated. And as we've established, you're kind of a pioneer in that.
Well, thank you.
Where do you see it going?
Well, I mean, I think that some of the very neat things that I suspect will happen over the next 5 or 10 years will be formal innovations. That is to say, saying, well, kids do have a more instinctive sense of how to use the internet, and in particular, kind of like non-linear storytelling, you know, jumping from thing to thing like you do, in fact, as you're surfing. Is there a way to write something that would have once been called a novel in a sort of exploded form like that, so that you're moving around through pieces as opposed to moving from page to page in a straightforward linear way? And I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see really wonderful books for teens, very innovative books for teens, where video is part of it and different kinds of fragments, and that could be really cool.
Let's try to sneak in one more quick call. Hi, Nancy, calling from Cambridge. Nancy, can you be brief?
Yes, I'm calling as another one of these adult fans who really came into this genre as a mother rather than as an adult. But I wanted to say how blown away I was by the Octavian books and by your the tour de force of your style and how you learned 18th century diction so well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Marvelous. And the last comment, which pertains to your work, is I just find young adult writers so much more adventurous than the sort of fiction world as a whole. I mean, your just last comments were, I think, very apropos, willing to experiment and the subject matter, range of subject matter. And I find myself more and more turning to young adult literature just as a reader. And I'm saying that as a former professor of literature. I just find both I think in Octavian Nothing, you take up a lot of wonderful literary traditions. At the same time, it's
right. We've got it, Nancy. I'm going to have to cut you off because we just have a few seconds left. But it raises an interesting concluding question here, which is: are there things that you can do as a YA author that a guy like, I don't know, Jonathan Franzen can't?
I don't know. I mean, I think the thing is that there's the same range within young adult fiction that there is in fiction in general. So, the whole world of fiction is contained there in a microcosm.
And in your books, I should say that all of the books that we've talked about of M.T. Anderson, we have extended excerpts of them right now at RadioBoston.org, along with some other goodies, including this terrific historical map of 18th century Boston that you used as a reference when you were writing the Octavian books, and it's really a cool thing to look at. M.T. Anderson, Boston visionary, treasure to have with us in the city, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
And stay with us. Coming up, one family's tragic story of losing their baby to pertussis, a highly contagious but vaccine-preventable disease which has been on the rise. Stay with us. I'm Adam Ragusea with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.